let's begin our time of study with a brief prayer. We open our hearts and our minds to the infinite, indwelling Lord of love. We honor the gurus in this lineage of Kriya Yoga. Who have shared their commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. We are grateful for their wisdom, their insights, and we open ourselves to our innate wisdom. May the truth, the eternal truth, be revealed from within. May we know it and may we live it. And may this time of Gita study inspire us to be steadfast on our path. Om, peace, peace, peace. This morning's Gita study, this session's Gita study, we'll focus on chapter 3, verses 3 to 7. And these are from teachings, this first part that Yogacharya O'Brien originally recorded in May of 2023. And of course, chapter 3 is considered to be the chapter on Karma Yoga. So beginning with verse 3, Lord Krishna says to the seeking soul, Arjuna, O blameless one, in this world, a twofold path has been taught by me. Are sometimes understood as introversion and extroversion. And what we're looking at is how they must work together. So all yogic paths ultimately serve the same purpose: purification of the body and the mind for realization of our true nature. Freedom from identification with the ego and its delusions of separateness, which gives rise to attachment and aversion. Yoga practice is about seeing clearly so we can act skillfully. And skillful action, which frees us, it also aligns us with our soul. So we can understand Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga as different approaches to the same goal or aspects of a complete path. Jnana Yoga focuses on the instruments, on mind, memory, perception, thought, discernment, ego, viewed through the Samkhya system, which identifies the various aspects of manifestation of creation, and it relates to the five instruments of perception, how we experience and cognize the world. And then Karma Yoga, on the other hand, engages the organs of action, our capacity to move, grasp, assimilate, speak. And these two paths overlap, but we can see that one is clearly inwardly focused and the other is outwardly focused. none of these yogic paths, Jnana Yoga, Karma, Bhakti, Raja Yoga, none of them exist in isolation. They are interdependent, they are interwoven. They relate to tendencies within us. I mean, clearly when we look at our life, both contemplation and action are required. They're both necessary. One tendency may predominate, but balance is the goal. The goal is to let one support the other. And verse 4 tells us, not by abstaining from work does one attain freedom from action, nor by renunciation does one attain perfection. Not by abstaining from work does one attain freedom from action, nor by renunciation does one attain perfection. And verse 5 says, for no one can remain even for a moment without doing work. Everyone is made to act helplessly by the impulses born of nature. The embodied experience in the waking state is one of continual engagement in the world and the objects of perception that we encounter. Everything is moving and changing, fueled by the continuous mutations of the gunas. Little sidebar. We have often talked about making a bumper sticker, please don't do this, jokingly, that said, the gunas made me do it. Or a t-shirt. Everything is moving and changing, fueled by the continuous mutations of the gunas. I mean, clearly, obviously, we live in an ever-changing field of interaction. Everything is moving, driven by the gunas, the qualities of nature. And as we've seen in the Gita so far, attraction to sensory objects and attachment to outcomes hinders self-realization. Attraction to sensory objects and attachment to their outcome hinders self-realization. They can cloud our discernment and disconnect our experience of higher reality. When we're attached to something, we operate from our lower mind. You know, our sense and our reactive thinking. And we don't have access to buddhi, the faculty of discrimination in these cases. And when we're engaged in study and meditation on the spiritual path, in particular of Kriya Yoga, since that's what we're about, you know that we need a clear, calm, and peaceful mind to make wise choices in this changing world. We need to be clear. We need to be calm. We need to be alert. We need to be awake. We need to be centered. But desires are so powerful. And then through our desires, we begin to have sensory seduction. And that clouds our clarity. But even with all that, very early on in the spiritual journey, we begin to see that freedom is possible. We wouldn't come back otherwise, right? As Uma will often tell us, It's simple, but it's not that easy. So the problems, when we gain a little clarity, the problems of how we're living become clear, and so does the possibility of freedom. But here's the rub. We often, and I'm going to add always, if I may, we often see the truth, see the possibilities before we can live it. We know better than we do. And that's very common. That's natural. A little sidebar, I remember early on when Uma would teach Living the Eternal Way course, 12-week version, and now we share this, those of us who teach it, we often share this. It's like we're going along in our life and we, meaning our ego, because we haven't come to Kriya Yoga path or some spiritual path yet, have been throwing, we're on a train and we've been throwing coals into the engine car. Is that what I should call it? Makes sense. We've been throwing coals in there to keep ourselves going, but our ego's the one throwing them in there. And then we see the path start to unfold for us, the light comes on, and we're like, whoa, I'm gonna stop throwing coals into that engine. But the engine is already full of coals, of coal. And so even though we can see the way, it's going to keep moving the direction we were already moving. As long as we don't put more fuel in there, it will calm down and then we can move forward in the way we would like. Okay. So the questions Uma poses for us, or says we ask ourselves, how do we free ourselves from the compelling forces of nature and the imprints of desire in the mind, the samskaras? How do we bring our doing into consistent harmony with our knowing? For some, the first impulse, you know, when that light comes on of, whoa, look how I've been living. Sometimes the first impulse is to run away from the path. And sometimes when we see that and we see freedom as possible, the impulse by the ego, when we see that freedom is possible, is to try to run away from our life, from our job, our relationship, our responsibilities, thinking that escape is the solution. But it's not. As the saying goes, wherever we go, there we are. We've seen this before in our spiritual practice, when we're studying the yamas and niyamas, the restraints and observances. We're inspired to live truthfully. We study satya. We're inspired to live truthfully with integrity. And then we start looking at it and we're shocked to see how we so often fall short, how easily we exaggerate. Oh, I had the deepest meditation. I was in complete samadhi for an hour, but it might have been 4 minutes. How we exaggerate, or how we withhold. We don't tell the whole truth. Or we speak carelessly. You know, that story that Uma would often share, during the learning about Satya, learning about truthfulness, where maybe we're, I don't know, at Pete's Coffee or shopping at the market, and an old acquaintance walks in, you know, someone who we haven't seen for a long time. And, you know, we have this little small talk, oh, it's so nice to see you, so nice to see you. And the person says, oh, well, let's get together sometime. And we know for sure that's not gonna happen. But the natural thing people often do is say, yeah, that sounds great, let's do that. You know, no harm, no foul. We don't mean a mean thing that we don't want to do that. We just know the truth is that's not going to happen. But we speak carelessly and we say it anyway. And we see all of that and then we think, silence is the answer. But we can't conveniently just stop speaking. Even if we do, our thoughts persist. And that is speaking in its own way. It's the same with action. We may try to renounce externally, but unless we deal with the root of desire within, we won't succeed. That's what these early verses in chapter 3 are pointing to. We've all tried the just say no, right, method. And it works for a minute. It works for a while. But that's all. Verse 6 says, one who restrains their organs of action, but continues in their mind to brood over the objects of senses, whose nature is deluded, is said to be a hypocrite or a person of false conduct. So outwardly refraining while inwardly brooding creates inner conflict. You know, we may outwardly appear that we're aligned. We may have mala and a shawl. We may appear to be aligned, but inwardly we know that we're not. And then that knowing eats away at our energy, our faith, and our joy. And then the ego has a field day with that, doesn't it? You're a bad devotee. We would say to ourselves, I'm not saying that to someone here. Right? We would say to ourselves when we know, you know, I mean, it's true also that in the beginning, as Uma has taught us, we have to fake it till we make it. Everyone does. That's how it is. And while we're in that state, you know, we know we're not in integrity fully. We're getting there. So we might be thinking to ourselves, oh, I'm such a bad devotee. Why study at all if I can't really follow through? Oh, I missed meditation for 3 days. I may as well quit meditating for the rest of my life. That inner division of doing one thing while thinking another thing undermines our integrity. And then with that, we lose our inspiration. We feel uninspired or disconnected from ourself. And when we feel that way, it's a signal to look at our alignment, at our attunement. We all feel that way from time to time, but you can probably look back toward the beginning of your journey or at times where your life just feels in shambles. You know, then those sorts of things rise up to the surface more quickly. So if we feel that uninspired or disconnected, we can take a look at our alignment, at our attunement. Yoga is wholeness, harmony of body, mind, and soul. And when we're in integrity, divine energy, prana, flows through us unimpeded. And when we're not, we feel depleted. There's a Sufi story that illustrates this teaching beautifully. A guru facing scarcity at his ashram tells his disciples to go into the village on market day, and he says, take food. He said, take food, but only when no one is looking. All the disciples go except one. And the guru asks, why? The disciple replies, Guruji, I cannot. Because no matter where I go, someone is always watching. My conscience is always with me. Someone is always watching. And that's the true disciple who understands someone is always watching. So how do we live with integrity, this higher level of integrity? Verse 7 says, but one who controls the senses by the mind, O Arjuna, and without attachment, engages the organs of action in the path of work, that person is superior. How do we control the senses by the higher mind? And the answer that Kriya Yoga gives is threefold. Action, discernment, and devotion. Action, discernment, and devotion. You know, we begin with self-discipline, the tapas, action. We commit to alignment with our divine self. We arrange conditions in our life that are supportive of this determination. The two monks here have really arranged conditions in their lives, right? They get to see it all brightly on the screen, up front and center. So we arrange conditions in our life that are supportive of this determination to live in alignment with our true self. And this means a supportive environment and self-care. Self-care that includes regular spiritual practice and routines for healthy living that helps us to keep our body, mind, spirit in balance. So we cultivate an intentional life that's focused on actualization of our highest potential. We don't lose sight of that goal. You know, Uma would often tell us, in the beginning, it feels like a salmon swimming upstream. So we have to make a U-turn, arrange conditions, and put effort in. We have a goal, we have a plan, we have a practice. And we don't lose sight of the goal. That's our North Star. Everything we do, we ask ourselves, is this going to take me closer to my North Star, or is it going to have me veer off? When the mind's clear, we can see sometimes it looks like we're veering off, but we know we're just going around an obstacle. The mind's not clear, we veer off and we just keep going past it. Don't lose sight of the goal. We have a goal, we have a plan, we have a practice, we have self-discipline, we have study, we learn about the self, the nature of consciousness, the mind, the senses, desires, and we practice what we know real time in the real circumstances of our daily life. We meditate each day using the tools that we have learned through Kriya Yoga, tools to purify the mental field and facilitate direct experience of our divine self. And then we learn how to abide in that center, right there in the storm, in the eye of the hurricane of our life. We learn how to abide in that place of peace, of wholeness and fulfillment, which is our essence of being. And this frees us from being compelled by desire, because we're already full, we're already content. So we're not desiring anything. Then we can see clearly what keeps us on course. Okay, little sidebar. How many of us right now are all the way back? What did she say? Oh no, I'm such a bad devotee. Why study if I can't even follow through? Well, this is a high practice we're in. If we weren't ready, we certainly wouldn't be here, right? If we weren't ready, we wouldn't be here. So when we're full spiritually, we're freed from being compelled by desire, because we're already full, we're already content. We can see clearly then what it is that keeps us on course. It's like having fuel in your tank for the ride. You can't expect to be able to mitigate the forces of desire without having fuel in the tank. And the tank is the tank of spiritual joy. You need that to be able to walk this path through the ever-changing world. There's a little sidebar. Many of us, myself included, went to the marches last weekend. Was it last weekend? Mm-hmm. Last weekend. Not everyone, we all have our own way. But if you were at one of those, or heard about them, or watched on news, or read the news, or however you learn about these things in your life, it was pretty easy to witness the people whose spiritual joy tank was not full by the way that they were acting outwardly. And it was very easy to recognize those who were taking action, karma yoga, in the world, but their tank was full. So they were saying what needed to be said, but it wasn't just spewing all over the place. So we can see that in ourselves and in others. All right. We need our tank, our spiritual joy tank, to be full, enabled to walk in this ever-changing world and stay on our spiritual path. And we pray. Each morning, we align our intentions through prayer, and at the end of the day, we reflect, not judge, but to learn. What worked? What didn't? What did I learn? And then throughout the day, we have moments of reflection that bring us back to that practicing the presence. So we let our practice, we have our practice become 24/7. Not 6:30 to 7:30 or 7:30 to 8:30. 24/7. That's what we're doing all day, every day, not limited to some small time. And when desires arise that are contrary to our values, we don't give in to the ego's mantra, tomorrow. You know, the ego wants to put it off. Oh, I'll meditate more deeply tomorrow. I'll have work on my spiritual journal tomorrow. I'll pray tomorrow. No, we stop. And like Arjuna on the battlefield, we inquire. We notice. We notice. Desire has arisen. Ego is speaking. I want, I need, I will. This is not the higher self. This is the ego function. So we bust it by naming it, by identifying it. We disempower it. So we notice. And we remember that we are not what we observe. We are not the object. We're not the sense experience, not the ego sense of ownership either. We're none of that. We are the witness. We are the divine self. And that's the key. Step by step, taking it back, observing it, remembering. We have to remember that we are on this interactive battlefield and that you're seeing clearly, you're coming back. This is walking it back. Walking it back from the ledge and knowing that you have the capacity to make the right choice because you are none of that other stuff. So we notice, we remember, we walk it back. This is noted in verse 7. But one who controls the senses by the mind, O Arjuna. So this is controlling your mind by step-by-step awareness. One who controls the senses by the mind, O Arjuna, and without attachment engages the organs of action in the path of work, that person is superior. This is how we control the senses with the mind. Not through suppression, but through awareness. And so spiritual study becomes our practice. Self-study becomes our practice. And then practice becomes insight. And then insight becomes freedom from desire. And then the third key Kriya Yoga key to freedom, you know, is surrender to God. Ishwari Pranida. It's letting go of the delusional sense of being separate. And in this practice we've been talking about, through study, through recognizing and walking it back, we're disengaging that. We're taking that apart. We're dismantling it. We surrender through discernment in the process that was just described. But we also surrender simply through devotion, through the many ways that we remember God is our life, all the ways that we practice the presence throughout the day. We align ourselves with the power of divine grace. So we'll close this part of the session with one of Umaji's daily inspirations. She wrote, "Renunciation does not require renouncing the world or our duties in it. The abode of the true renunciate is the cave of the heart. Everything that is done with non-attachment and love for God in our hearts is true renunciation. The abode of the true renunciate is the cave of the heart." So the next lesson, we will explore how to make action a joyful spiritual practice. But Umaji wrote, "Don't wait. Begin now, not tomorrow." So I wrote a little short commentary. I'll have to skip over some because I had little interwove some of it in there. I called this, I'm focusing my comments on that last verse, chapter 3, verse 7, and I called it "Awake in Action." And it's a powerful verse. This one's a very powerful verse because it offers insight and inspiration for any of us who are seeking to live a spiritual life in the midst of our daily activities. And you don't have to raise your hand, but let me just ask, is there anyone tuned in here who is not dealing with issues in their daily activities? That's what I thought. So this verse, chapter 3, verse 7, "The one who controls the senses with the mind and engages in karma yoga with no attachment excels." This verse contrasts two types of seekers: those who merely appear to renounce, and those who are inwardly disciplined and truly engaged in a useful way. It made me think of what Roy said that Yogananda would say about his devotees. Outwardly, these boys all look just like anyone else, but inwardly, something very different is happening. Don't quote me verbatim on that, but that's the gist of it. Krishna says, "It is the person who restrains the senses with the mind and who engages in the world with no attachment to results who excels." Now, many of you know, some of you may not, that we are in the process, finally, after 2 years of visioning, more than that. My sister and my mom are here working on the mural on the back of the temple where the fire was. My sister's an artist and my mom's her sous chef. And others are there helping. I am, and others are there helping. So many opportunities to engage in the world of the mural with no attachments to outcome. Mm-hmm. And so I am having such extraordinary moments of excelling, and then there are other moments. Mm-hmm. But here we are in this place that is such a sacred place. It's really easy here, surrounded by devotees, to be surrendered and to know that it's God's work and it's all coming through. It's beautiful, by the way. There are no problems. And my sister is like every 10 minutes, does this look the way you want it? Do you want, I mean, unbelievably accommodating. You know, do you want one more tree there or one less? Is 108 trees plenty or would you like 106? I mean, it's like that. So there's none of that. But I don't understand how these things work. I mean, last night I went to bed and I said, this looks like a high school basketball uniform. It's dark blue in one area and gold in the other area coming together. How is this gonna look like the Himalayas and the Ganges? You know, so things often, there's a whole underlying world that's going on that's preparing us for the highest and best. And we can't always see what's to come, all the refinements that are coming. And she just laughed and looked at me and laughed and said, yes, that looks a lot like the uniform you wore, doesn't it? But that's the first of about six layers. And of course, I've seen the, you know, the prototype picture, but I have no, it's her background. So to her, this totally makes sense. We walk through, you know, in the world in this way sometimes, don't we? I also came upon Sumati out in the garden yesterday, pulling all the flowers that are right in the entrance area across from the bookshop. She had a helper, who I won't name. And I'm looking at them like I looked at the blue and gold wall. Now, of course, I have faith, and I know that, you know, Sumati always has a plan, but you should see it now. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. It's extraordinary. It's more than 10 times better than it was or than I could have envisioned. And it's often this way when we walk in the world, isn't it? Uma will often tell us, the Lord will put the next stone in front of you. Not the next 10. The next one. Then you take that one step. Then the next stone shows up and you're like, oh, I thought I was turning right, but the gurus put the stone to the left. Okay. Thought I found my spiritual home. Now God said, move to the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe the gurus have a plan for you in the Midwest that you didn't know about. Now you're learning that you do. So, living in the world with non-attachment, we have so many examples. Uma is a great example. We also have the wonderful example, many of us, of being with Roy. He wrote about this, Kriya practice helps control prana and thereby quiets the senses and mind. When the senses are calm, the intellect can discern clearly and the soul's light is revealed. So that light then will shine on that one step right in front of us so we can take it. Yogananda wrote, perform all your duties with your mind concentrated on God. Live for God and work for God. This is the inner attitude of a karma yogi. You know this, we don't act to gain personal rewards. We act as instruments of God. In the Gita, Krishna doesn't tell Arjuna, yikes, there's a battle. You're my greatest devotee. Run, hide, escape. He tells him, enter it. Enter it. Be anchored in yoga. And this is our invitation to fully engage in life, even at Cisco or HP or Apple or the school you work at or your own home with your family or alone with yourself, whatever it is, whatever you're doing. Fully engage in life, not from fear or compulsion, but from clarity, from devotion, and from surrender. You know, this verse ends with the phrase, that one excels. Who is this person? Who is this person who excels? Well, it is the one who brings the senses under control of the purified mind and then engages wholeheartedly in the world and offers all actions without craving reward or recognition. Lahiri Mahasaya wrote, action cannot be renounced, but it must be performed without attachment to its fruit. That is renunciation. So in this light, we understand that karma yoga is not merely some path of service. Often people say, yeah, I'm just giving seva. I'm just doing seva. Karma yoga is a path of liberation. It's the practical outworking of spiritual realization. This verse gives us a threefold prescription to follow. You know I like things in threes or fours. Control the senses. Don't let the outer world dominate your inner world. Craziness, right? Don't let the outer world dominate your inner world. You know, practice pratyahara, practice withdrawing from the world that is sense-driven. Use our meditation practices, our pranayama. So control the senses. Number two, guide the mind. Keep the mind yoked to your higher self, not scattered by fear, by desire, or by habit. And then number three, act with detachment. Now, I moved when I was in high school. One uniform was blue and gold. The other one was, I can't even remember, it was so bad. I think it was kind of like maroonish, orangish, and they always have gold, so some form of yellowish gold. The blue and gold team was so much better. But I had to let go of being attached. I was very happy that blue and gold was what ended up on the wall, because that team was 24-0. So we'll say we're golden. But it could have been any color, and it would have been the right color coming in the background. So we have to proceed in life with detachment. Serve, contribute, build, love, but do so as a free soul, not as someone who's grasping or recoiling. So I have one simple practice for us, and this is the same thing from a different angle that I've said in many of our sessions. Before beginning any task, pause. Take one deep breath and say, "This is yours, Lord. This is yours, God. I offer this action to you. This transforms our ordinary work into karma yoga. So I'll close with this quote from Umaji. The ultimate cliff notes on all of these teachings. This is from Living for the Sake of the Soul. Live in the world, but not of it. Work, love, serve, meditate, and be free.